The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
You're listening to The Nonprofit Voice, brought to you by 100 Women Who Care About Long Island. 100 Women Who Care About Long Island is a giving circle made up of local women who want to financially support vetted Long Island charities and help shed light on the work that they do. This show is produced by Marketing Works.
Good morning. This is Ron Gold from Marketing Works, and I am Laura's replacement for today. We work together. We both do the shows, so that's great. And the name of the show that I do is called The Nonprofit Voice, and you could reach me at ron@marketingworkspr.com. So, Judy, I am going to surprise you by telling you that I know all about the Teresa Foundation. I have been at one of your events when you honored one of my clients, John Laspina from Maple. I don't know how many years ago it was, but what a great event that was. It was so many people and they were bursting out of the doors.
That's so wonderful.
And I sat with the Laspina. Yeah, and I sat with the Laspina family and it was great. And I know the founders with Vincent and Susan. I mean, From their law firm, right? They have a law firm.
Oh my goodness, this is even more special.
There you go. Well,
there's a reason that I'm speaking to you instead of Laura.
There must be, and I'm sure maybe I met you at that event because I see that you have been there since 1992, right?
Exactly. I'm sure you did meet me for whatever reason, because the Laspina family, they're such awesome people.
I have
very supportive over the years.
Oh, absolutely. And they have been a client of mine for close to 10 years. And for anybody to last more than a few years with John, you got to be good. John's tough, but he's great.
Because I don't know him like that. I just know him to be an awesome person when it comes to the bowling lane, the alley, the events that we've done there, and their support for the foundation has been just awesome.
They're amazing. We're doing a release for him now where he's done over $500,000 in support for the BVL, which is the Bowling for Veterans, which is his favorite charity. He is the president of the BVL in the country, national. But
I didn't know that.
But we're not going to talk about him and take up too much of your time with that. We want to talk about the Teresa Foundation. So I know the history, but I want the audience. And by the way, they have been on my show before. This isn't your first time on the Nonprofit Voice. They've been on at least twice over the years.
Okay, that's awesome. I've done radio, I was on TV before doing a thing on the foundation, but that's been many years. So this is my first radio presentation about the Teresa Foundation. And the Teresa Foundation was named after Teresa Alessandra Russo. And the Russos are very good friends of mine. So I actually knew Teresa. So with me knowing her, and then after her passing, and the family wanted to do something, hands down, my husband and I had been on board. And we strove to do something more substantial. In the beginning, there was a tree planting and things like that. But they wanted to do something on a bigger scale to help more people with special needs.
And you've been there. We're on our 30th year you've been with them. Wow. if it's 1992, it is, right? 30 years.
Right. Exactly. But I didn't come on. I did certain committees in the beginning as they were starting to come up. And then I didn't come on board to be on the board of directors. I think it might have been 2 or 3 years in. It's been a long time.
Well, are they still doing their galas like they did?
Our 25th gala was we called it the annual dinner dance.
Right,
and it was a gala, if you will. It was very fun. It was like the prince and the princess going to the ball, as you have attended one in the past. It was a wonderful event. but the 25th was our last one, and I don't know.
It's 30 years. You should do one within the next year.
That after that last one that we did in 2019, and then the pandemic came about, so it was like it was in the start.
Yeah, and you know what? Little by little, these galas are starting to come back. I have a few of them in October and November. Not as many as we used to do, because we're a marketing and public relations company, and our clients are all nonprofits, and our nonprofits used to do, every one of them did a gala, but, you know, some of them are tiptoeing back. The golf outings, you know, are doing great. You know, one by one, they're still out there. But the other events are still kind of tiptoeing around. I think by next year, I think everybody will be back doing them.
Well, we just had our annual golf outing. That was our 25th in June, and it was an awesome event, and we did very well with it. So we're always so grateful and thankful to all our supporters, whether they attend the event or if they send in raffles or go online and just make a donation. We're very thankful.
Well, where did you have your golf outing?
It was at the North Hills Country Club.
Oh, great. I'm doing an event there in November.
Oh, okay. So you're familiar with it.
Oh, yeah. It's great. I used to do one with QCP, Queens Center for Progress. And that was one of the three golf courses that they had that each time they had a golf outing. Yeah, we should all be that lucky.
Yes, it's a very nice place.
But you know what? You, being part of 100 Women Who Care, are probably on the other end, the ones that have done the 18 holes. Some of the smaller agencies that are part of it, they're looking for ways to do some kinds of fundraisers. And we came up with what we call a nine and dine, where we do nine holes of golf and a barbecue for $100. And the agencies, it's good for small ones. It's good for agencies where they feel that their client, their staff doesn't play golf, should feel that it's not all about that staff. It's about the people who support you and your donors. Those are the ones who are going to come up with the money. Unfortunately, the people that work at the nonprofits don't get enough money to, you know, to buy a golfer, to be a golfer.
I totally get it. Yeah.
So tell me.
Like a great idea.
I heard, you know, that Teresa was an amazing little girl. She really was. Yes. And everybody worshipped her. And just the way she was and her dedication, determination was always apparent.
Teresa was a beautiful baby girl. She had mounds of curly, dark brown hair. She had beautiful, big brown eyes, and her eyes twinkled. And you would always see her with her pigtails and her pink wheelchair. And as she went around town with her family, everyone always noticed her. And she didn't speak, but when you talked to her, she responded with her eyes. And you knew she understood what you were saying, and you just fell in love with her. Unfortunately, we had her only until 5.5 years, but she made such a difference to all the people that came in contact with her in that time frame. That's why this organization has grown to where it is now, because of the little girl with the pigtails and the pink wheelchair smiled with her eyes, and she loved music. She loved music. So it's amazing that all these many years later, we're still talking about Teresa Alessandra Russo. So it's amazing.
So you set up the foundation, right? How is the foundation set up?
The foundation is set up. We have our main office, well, our office in Lido Beach, New York. It's at 250 Lido Boulevard. It is one that we have a board of directors. We have various committees. We, you know, grant committee, all the committees that we need to run the different programs that we have.
Well, so you came up with the idea that you were going to set up a founder, not you, but the group came up, or the co-founders came up with the idea that you wanted to raise money for people who had developmental disabilities. Am I right?
Yes, but more so to assist them also in focusing on art, music, dance, drama, recreation, because a lot of times people that have children, they have may have a child with special needs and a child that does not need any other type of program. So we wanted to be able to have the child with special needs have a program that they can attend as well. So it came about.
I think that's very important.
It
really is, because there's differences there. And you know, the attention that goes to one versus the other, it's, you know, even though they have disabilities, I like the way you're putting this right now. It makes a lot of sense.
Just because a child may have special needs, their parents shouldn't feel like that child is being denied a service that they probably could participate in if it's available. So any of those groups that are out there that are striving towards that, we are still in the cracks kind of foundation where we're looking to help them. We have a grant program that they can go online, fill out the grant application, send us the information and supporting documents. Our grant committee would vet that group or organization to make sure we're sending money to someone that is following what we have as our mission, and that's to have services for that child that may feel a little different from their sibling because they can't do something that their sibling is doing. If you're taking your one daughter to a dance class and your special needs daughter has nothing to do, that's not a level playing ground. So we try, by the grace of God, to level the playing ground.
So how much is there a certain amount that you give out every year? How does that work? And do you give it out, like you said, you give it to groups, do you give it to agencies as well?
Organizations. Our grant program, we have a deadline of January 15 for the spring and summer program, and July 15 for the fall and winter program. So during that time, it also depends on how our fundraisers have, you know, done throughout the year. And we then decide that we're going to give out X amount of money to make sure everything's copacetic, if you will. And to date for 2022, we have given out $148,344 in grant money.
That's great. Did you find that?
I think that's the highest that we've ever done.
And why do you think that is?
Well, I think also during the pandemic, some people may have sat around and decided, what am I going to do? And besides watching videos and dance-thons on TV, and they decided to be more charitable.
How did you determine who gets the money?
Based on the grants that we got, the grant committee goes through every grant. They decide on who gets, well, say if a person requests X amount of dollars. And depending on what type of program it is, if it fits within all the criteria that we're asking for, then we either give them the full amount of what they're requesting, or we give them a portion of it depending on what they're asking for as far as what they're doing with the money. And we may earmark it for just the part of the program that's dealing with the special needs.
That makes a lot of sense.
If it's not dealing with the special needs, then you're not going to be the person that's going to get those funds. But if a portion of the program has something dealing with special needs, we'll earmark a portion of it to go for those special needs. The grant committee submits that information to our board of directors, and we approve or disapprove whatever it is, and we come up with X amount of people, get X amount of monies, and that's how it goes.
I love X. I have X. X amount of money. X amount of money. No, I'm kidding.
We know from the Treasury report how much money we have to work with.
Now, so you say $148,000 for 2022. That hasn't been dispersed yet, right?
We've given, we just had a grant committee, and they presented us with the grant, and that's the number that we came up with, the total. And some of those checks have been written depending on when those programs start. And before the end of the year, the total amount will have been submitted.
What is the largest amount you've given out to one person or one agency or one organization?
Off the top of my head, I can't really...
It doesn't have to be exact.
I'll say maybe 10 to 15,000, depending on the group and what they were, you know, what they were doing, or if they were startup, or how many programs and how many children that they're going to be able to service. So there are a lot of variables. We try to make sure the ratio of children that they're assisting is practical, based on we've been doing this for a long time. So
30 years.
We want to be fair.
Yeah, and what percentage of the people that apply get it?
I would say there is a small percentage that don't receive the grant because, like I mentioned before, we go by the criteria of the organization. They have to have a program that deals with special needs in the arts, music, dance, drama, recreation. And if they don't, most people don't apply if they don't do, you know, have anything to do with that. So I would say it's a small percentage, maybe 5%, that don't fall into our category. You know, there are organizations out there that send in a grant to every person or group that they think they could try it, but we stick to our mission.
Well, let me ask you something. The when you first started, you were probably at 50,000, 60,000, 70,000, and now you've gotten up to 148,000. Do you have a goal that you want to reach?
Well, in the beginning, we were just doing local things, dealing with social workers, trying to feel our way to see who needed assistance. And that's why I said fill in the cracks, because there are a lot of people that find themselves in a situation with a special needs child, and then they don't know exactly what to do, what agencies to go to. And we reached out to social workers to see if we could guide them, because the Russos had gone through this and they knew firsthand what difficulties there were. So after we started to build up, now we are where we are. And thankfully, we've been able to acquire the funds that we need to give more and more people. So the bottom number, I'm not going to say at this point, because we want to give away as much money as we can to help people. As long as the foundation can be around to do that, we'll go until the wheels fall off, if you will.
That's
but,
great.
What that number is, I can't say.
No, that's fine.
We may have a boom at some point.
Don't you have a playground that you built?
Yes.
I remember that.
It's called Teresa's Fun Place, and it's located at United Cerebral Palsy in at Nassau.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
at,
great.
UCP at Nassau in Roosevelt. And it's a beautiful playground. And since 2017, we had to go back and renovate it because it was falling into disrepair. And since 2017, we've granted $175,000 to it.
Wow.
And it's named after Teresa, and it's a wonderful playground. It, you know, for children with abilities as well as disabilities. And if a child is not mobile, they have swings that the child could go in on the wheelchair and enjoy the experience of swinging.
That's amazing.
It's literally awesome. And fun fact for you.
All right, Judy, we have to wind this up, but how could people get in touch with you?
You can call the Teresa Foundation at 516-432-0200 or go to teresafoundation.org, and that's Teresa TH, or you can go to Facebook and all the other social media sites.
Judy, it's been great speaking with you. This is Ron Gold from the Nonprofit Voice, and we'll be back.
You're listening to The Nonprofit Voice, brought to you by 100 Women Who Care About Long Island. 100 Women Who Care About Long Island is a giving circle made up of local women who want to financially support vetted Long Island charities and help shed light on the work that they do. This show is produced by Marketing Works.
Good morning. This is Ron Gold. I am replacing, I hate to say replacing, but I am taking the place of Laura Polker today on my show. It's called The Nonprofit Voice, and I am lucky enough to have one of my friends on the other end. I consider Dana Lopez a friend of mine, right, Dana?
Absolutely, Ron. How you doing?
I'm doing good, and here you are again 2 weeks later. You're doing a great job of branding the inn.
Here I am again. Thank you.
Here you are again, and we'll do the show again. It's a different audience completely, but that's okay. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm doing really well. Just happy to talk about what we're doing at the inn. It's a lot of great stuff.
I know, and I was playing golf with Mel Goldman the other day, who is a member of True Partners with me, and he said that he is doing the work on the new building for you with Old Borough.
We're doing so much work, and it's really very exciting. We're really thrilled to be able to expand our services, to provide whatever the community needs, the people that are in need in our communities, as much as we can. So thank you to Mel for doing everything that he's doing.
Yeah, and I want to hear more about it. So tell me where you are as far as the new building is concerned. What is a new building? And we're talking to Dana Lopez from the Inn. I didn't want to miss that. She is a marketing director, and she does a great job of getting the word out about the Inn.
Thank you. Well, I love talking about some of the things that we do. So just kind of, a little backstory. Since, March of 2020, like a lot of other people, we had to sort of shift and change our programs around. Since March of 2020, we haven't been able to allow guests to come inside the building so they could sit down and eat their meals as we were doing in the past. So we shifted and we started making sandwiches in the beginning, to-go sandwiches and bag lunches, and handing them out the front door. And that sort of evolved into hot meals and soups and to-go, just a real complete to-go meal, along with other items with, toiletries and diapers and everything that we were distributing inside the building. We were just sort of putting it out to the guests that were standing outside the front door. And we've been doing that all of this time. So now we're set to actually reopen. I mean, we never closed, but we're set to reopen this fall to allow guests to come back into the building. They have not been inside for 2.5 years. And we're finally, now that we are comfortable with the, keeping everybody safe and making sure that everybody has what they need, guests will be able to come back into the building and have their meal inside, but also still have the option for a to-go lunch, which is something we never did before. So that's really exciting. That came out of COVID itself. So right now we're doing major renovations at the Mary Brennan Inn Soup Kitchen in Hempstead. And also we've acquired the building next door to the Mary Brennan Inn. So we have the building next door to the Mary Brennan Inn. On one side is the Center for Transformative Change. On the opposite side, there was a 25,000 square foot building that was occupied by Parker Jewish Institute that we now have acquired and are going to be expanding our services even more.
That's amazing. And I have to say that you gave me a tour when I was there, like maybe a year before COVID. And when I walked through it and I saw the camaraderie between the people that you had fed that day, they were sitting there, they were having a good time talking to each other. It was great. You do a great job there. That I love the Inn, and I'm going to have a chance to see Jean on Wednesday night. She's coming to the True Partners event that I invited you to, but you have an answer.
Yes, so, you know, outside of work is tougher with the family, but I'll try my best.
I have that with Melissa. Melissa can't go to a lot of things because
you have small kids, right?
That's right. So tell me how the Inn was started for the people that are listening that don't know.
Sure. Well, I'm actually really happy to say that we're coming up in 2023 on our 40-year anniversary of serving the community through, you know, meals and housing and other services. So in 2023, we will have been in existence for 40 years.
And you haven't been there that long, right? Because you're not 40 yet.
I'm not even that old, Ron.
I know.
No, I am. But anyway, I was very young. No, I've actually been there for the last 9 years, which has been just amazing to be able to work and do what I do for such a wonderful organization. But the history of the Inn itself is that in 1983, a chaplain at the time at Hofstra University named Mike Moran and a woman named Pat O'Connor decided that they were going to open the very first soup kitchen that ever existed in Nassau County. And the reason for that was because Mike Moran was taking Hofstra students at the time into Brooklyn to serve food to, you know, to people that didn't have the resources to have a meal there, which was wonderful work to do. But when they got back to Hempstead and they, you know, were driving into Long Island, they realized, you know, there are people in need here as well. And that's just sort of a misconception on Long Island that there are people in need, that there are people that are living in poverty, because Long Island is very often thought of as a very wealthy and well-to-do area, which it is in Nassau and Suffolk counties. Both of them are very wealthy counties, some amongst the wealthiest in the country. However, there's another side that people don't always see. So they started the Mary Brennan and Soup Kitchen in 1983 and started by serving, I think that first day was like 60 people. And they were hard to find because they had to sort of, you know, kind of people didn't know that they were there. And since then, you know, it's grown into emergency housing shelters, temporary housing shelters, long-term housing, and of course, a resource center called the CTC, the Center for Transformative Change, that just provides a host of social services. And, you know, we grow with the need, and we try to provide based on what we're seeing is, you know, the most of what people need at any given time.
Well, you touched on COVID. And you really didn't get into it, but that was a very tough time for the Inn, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we can agree that COVID was a tough time for everybody in the world. But if you think about it, the people that were already vulnerable, the people that already were struggling, to have COVID hit at the time that it did, and, you know, it not only hurt the people that were already hurting, but it hurt people that didn't know anything about that kind of struggle before, or maybe they were sort of teetering on, you know, living check to check or whatever it is. And then to have family members pass away, to have people, you know, the main breadwinners of the household lose their jobs, even if it was just temporary, you know, we're kind of, you know, I've heard before that we're all sort of, you know, a paycheck or two or three away from, you know, not being as comfortable as we're used to being. So that's what we saw. We started serving, I think within the year 2020 to 2021, we started serving 1,000 more families than we had served the year before. So there were so many people that hadn't even ever had to use our services that all of a sudden, because of COVID and what it brought, had no choice.
And what are you seeing now? Has that number dropped considerably?
A little bit. You know, it depends. It varies because it definitely has gone down. But long term, you know, people talk about long term COVID, right? But they talk about long term COVID physically in terms of, you know, people having to struggle to survive because of the other things that COVID brought, like, you know, losing family members or unfortunately losing jobs. That type of long term COVID is sticking around. So, you know,
if you remember Hurricane Sandy back in 2012, it took a lot, you know, for a lot of people, you know, the storm happened and maybe they lost power for a little while and then they sort of got back. There were so many people that for years after Sandy couldn't get back on their feet. And this is really no different. After COVID, there were so many people that just struggled so much to get back on their feet. And that's the population that we continue to try to support as much as we can.
So next week you have a golf outing, right?
We do. Thursday, September 22nd is our golf and tennis. Tennis is an added addition this year, our golf and tennis fundraiser. It is the 22nd. We have a very early morning tea time. We have a morning shotgun at 8 a.m. and an afternoon shotgun at 1.
We've got cocktails,
dinner, and it all is happening at the Nassau Country Club in Glen Cove.
So oh, wow.
We're very excited about that. Should be a great day.
Good for you. And then you have the luncheon in October, right?
In October. Yeah, that's right. So
what is the luncheon?
The luncheon is just an opportunity. It's a really wonderful networking event and fundraising event run by not only some of our staff members, but our committee members, a couple of our board members that are just so dedicated. And this is a wonderful event. It's on Friday, October 21st at the Garden City Hotel, which is a beautiful venue. And it's just a feel-good day. You know, it is in the afternoon, and it's an opportunity to meet like-minded people that support the inn or support good causes. We've got, you know, various ways to support what we do. And also, you know, it's a really fantastic opportunity to network. Our honoree is Matt Classy of GCP Capital Group. And we're just really excited about, you know, everybody coming out.
We're talking to Dana Lopez, the marketing director director of marketing at the Inn. And if you want to reach the Inn, how can they get to you?
So easiest way to find out exactly what we need, exactly what we're doing is our website. And that is the-inn.org. Everything is up on there. A lot of people need to know, well, what do you need us to do? There are so many ways to support us. If it's not volunteering your time, which with the reopening of the Mary Brennan Inn, we're definitely going to need volunteers again. I got word this week that we are starting to collect gently used clothing, whereas during COVID we were only taking brand new clothing with tags. Now we're back to taking your clothing that is gently used and clean, and we are going to be collecting clothes again. You could of course make a monetary donation, go to an event, hold a drive. There's so many things that people can do to help us.
Well, you said you're going to need volunteers again. How is it? Have you started to look for volunteers, or is this something new?
Well, we've always, you know, we continued to serve, we did always have volunteers. We just had to decrease the number that we needed every day because previously our volunteers were cooking a meal. They were, you know, serving 400 guests in the main dining room of the soup kitchen. They were sorting clothing. They were doing things that during COVID, it kind of changed so much. So we went from having something like 30 volunteers a day at the soup kitchen to maybe 10, you know, if that many, and they were at different shifts. We couldn't have everybody in the building at the same time, that kind of thing. Now we are back to not as many yet until we officially bring the guests back in the building, but corporate and individuals can come in as small groups at different shifts during the day. Again, we're going to need distribution people to sort clothing. We have with us taking clothing again, we're going to need volunteers in the clothing boutique to sort through donations and to distribute clothing. We're going to need, various different volunteers for various different tasks, especially in the new building. We're cleaning, we're sorting, we're stocking. We've got a lot going on, and there's a lot of moving parts. So, yeah, we definitely need some volunteers to help us out.
So the new building, as you said, is 25,000 square feet. That's pretty big. What are some of the new things that you're going to be doing there?
Yeah, so it is big. So the nice part is that when we get donations, although we don't need to store them for a long period of time, because everything we get, we try to move out to those in need as soon as possible. That's why we do ask for clothing, but we actually, this is important, we ask for in-season clothing only, because we want to make sure that we sort through it and get it out to people the best that can use it right away. The building is enormous. It's giving us a lot of space. Some of the new programs will be workforce development. This is the plan. We're hoping that if all goes to plan, workforce development, where we can have an opportunity to help people re-enter the workplace. Mental health services are huge.
Very huge.
So we've been working closely with Central Nassau Guidance, which has been just a wonderful resource for us to be able to provide mental health services to the guests that come in that wouldn't be able to access those type of resources otherwise. So we're hopefully going to expand that program as well. We're going to go back to allowing people to come in and take showers. That was a big deal. At the Mary Brennan Inn before COVID, we had showers in the building, and those that didn't have anywhere to wash up, to take a shower, to shave, to, you know, brush their teeth, we're going to be, we'll have that service as well. The new building does have existing showers, and you know, we're hoping to be able to add a couple of more, as well as a temporary respite center where, you know, if someone needs to come in and just to rest. If you imagine
chill out
living, living on the street, or, you know, sometimes people just need to clear their minds and a safe, you know, warm, out of the elements place to sleep or rest is crucial to being able to
But that's the feel of the inn, right? The inn, they feel comfortable there. They know they can go grab a cup of coffee or eat something.
There's definitely a level of trust that is hard to have when you're in a vulnerable position. But I think that one of the things that I love personally the most about the inn is that if you've ever seen our tagline, it says, serving hungry and homeless Long Islanders with dignity, respect, and love. And that dignity and respect is offered to anyone that walks through the door. And it is huge. And it's followed by our staff, by our volunteers, by our board of directors, by anybody that, you know, works with us. It's a directive from the very beginning, that time in 1983, that was really important. We want to make sure that we're treating people, even if we don't know them personally, like those that we do know and that we do care about, because we understand that it could very easily be someone we love, or it can be ourselves on the other side. So that's how we operate every day.
How can people support you now?
Volunteer, make a monetary donation, come to an event, ask for a speaker to come to your school or your group or your church or your temple or wherever. Or hold a drive for goods that we need. There's a updated list of goods. Thanksgiving is coming up. I know a lot of people love to do Thanksgiving drives. So we always need something. So if you're on the website or if you give us a call, we can give you some ideas. The youth board, youth advisory board, high school student group that we meet once a month. I run that group. I love it.
I do too. It sounds great.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of ways to help.
So give that website number again and phone number.
Yep, the website's www.the-inn.org. Phone number is 516-486-8506.
How is your board? Is it very supportive?
Our board is incredibly supportive and also very involved in making sure that we succeed in our goals and our mission. One of our board members, of course, is Rob Kammerer, who is the husband of Gene Kelly. Rob and Gene Kelly, who's our executive director. Rob and Gene have been involved with the inn literally since day one back in 1983, and they are still going so strong. So we're so grateful. So to have, you know, board members and There's so many of them. You know, our board president, Vince Vidiello, Ron, who you know.
Yeah, he was great. He came on the show with us.
Yeah. Well, because I don't think I know. They're not just board members on paper. They genuinely have a passion for what we do, and it shows in the work that they help us with. So that's important. So they're wonderful.
What are your plans? What else is on the agenda for you guys? I think that you've got, for what you said.
Besides all the stuff that I just mentioned.
Yeah, right. What about you? How are you doing? You're still remote, right?
Well, actually, it depends on your role at the inn. Many of us are hybrid. So we do a combination of coming into the office and some work from home. We've had a lot of support just IT-wise, just to get us set up to make sure that we're able to do all of our work as much as, you know, everything that we have to do as if we were sitting right there. So that's been great. Those that work in our shelters or in the soup kitchen, they never left. They never, you know, not possible for them to work from home. And they we have the most amazing staff that so dedicated and cares for the guests so much. And I think that makes all the difference in the world. Whether you're home or there or what, we all care very deeply about the inn.
We see that in most of the special needs agencies, that people that are there, they just never want to leave and they love their job. We'd love to pay them more. I mean, because we don't understand how they could live like that. Some have two and three jobs, but this job, that's why if we went to the inn, we'd see people that have been there for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. And that's the same thing at every other agency that we have. I mean, you said
isn't that amazing?
It is. It's just like they don't leave and they don't get fired. Yeah. So that's good, too.
I've been there for 9 years, and I have to tell you, I'm a baby. Like, I still feel like I'm a newbie. So that's because, you know, so many people have been there for so long, because it's not just the job. You know, it's much more than that.
It is. And, you know, from where you guys are in Hempstead, you know, it's not easy to get to. You see that whole street there and people lining up and, you know, but nobody has a problem. Everybody loves the inn. So, Dana, absolutely. I am excited as always, since this is almost like a rerun of what we did 2 weeks ago. But I look forward to seeing you, and I wish you the best of luck. Dana Lopez,
thank you, Ron.
Director of Marketing at the Inn. And this is Ron Gold from Marketing Works, and the name of the show is A Nonprofit Voice.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.